Well, we wanted to bring back three people that we spoke to on Friday. All three of them, immigrants to the United States from various countries in the Arab world, where people have taken to the streets in protest over the weekend. They were touching base with their friends and their families, and they join us now with the updates. Naima Noor, director of the Tunisian Cultural and Information Center. Good morning, Naima.
Good morning.
Raja Athabani, Yemeni-American, student in human rights and international development. Good morning, Raja.
Good morning.
And Nancy Youssef, Egyptian-American, a professor of English literature at City University in New York, Baruch in New York. Good morning to all three of you.
Good morning.
Nancy, let's go to you first. Obviously, Egypt is on the minds and the headlines of every newspaper in the country. And it's also a measure of concern, not only for you and your family, but for those surrounding in the region. What are you worried about that could happen as Egypt is kind of on the brink here?
I think like everybody else, I'm worried about chaos. I'm worried about what happens if the protests continue with a deadlock. If there's no movement towards negotiation or discussion, that's my principal concern. Some of my family members are starting to become concerned about the work stoppage, the loss of wages over the past week. People are poor there, and they need, they need to make money. Cairo is a huge city; there are a lot of mouths to feed. It's not clear what's going to happen with food supplies. So, I'm concerned about some of the practical difficulties that are going to be felt more and more severely as these protests continue.
You know, Nancy, and we could ask you, Naima, the same sort of thing. It's a different situation economically in Yemen, but there have been reports already that. People in economically well-off suburbs like Zamalek or neighborhoods like Zamalek in Cairo or Heliopolis in Cairo or even in some other places around the country are divided with the people who are so poor who might be in the street, and that the government might be trying to exploit that sort of economic division in that people with means will take matters into their own hands and the poor will be left to themselves. Do you see that in the conversations with family and friends about what's going on in Egypt?
Not particularly. I mean, people are concerned for their own families and for the survival of their own families. The tensions between the very wealthy and the very poor are nothing new in Egypt.
Mm. Right. Well, Naima, let's bring that question to you about the economics. Part of the wealth income gap has been pointed to in Tunisia as one of the causes of the uprising there. But the uprising, the protests continue in Tunisia. How long are the people able to continue protesting as they strive to get exactly what they want in that government?
I mean, if people expose their lives in exchange of freedom and democracy, what is everything else mattering? I mean, they will go ahead until they got what they want.
They will continue until they
definitely, yes.
Every single member of Ben Ali's government out of the country.
Accountable.
Held accountable. Well, it is a different situation in Yemen, Raja. How does the income gap affect or the economy affect there, where we're talking about the country that has the lowest GDP, the highest number of poor people of any country in the region?
Well, the class system there, like, you don't really have a middle class. You have the very, very rich and the very, very poor. And the majority of the country, obviously, is very, very poor. And the thing with Yemen is that because there's poverty and there's deteriorating natural resources like water and oil, like, whether it's overthrowing the government, like, the government will collapse either way. You know what I mean? It's either because
really?
You have a Houthi rebellion in the north, a southern secessionist movement, and you have deteriorating natural resources like water and oil. You have the threat of ACAP, you have the threat of terrorist infiltration in more tribal regions. So Yemen is already becoming very, very unstable, and the government really isn't doing much about it.
So the brink you face in Yemen, the brink you absolutely face in Egypt, Nancy, but Naima, you're past the brink. What has your family members been saying about the new Tunisia, even given some of the unrest we've already alluded to?
My family is astonished by how much they stole from the people and the government.
How much the government stole?
How much the former, yes.
Has your family read this famous memoir or biography of the First Lady of Tunisia that's now suddenly a bestseller?
Yeah, La Régente, yeah, de Carthage. As a matter of fact, I knew her.
Really?
Yes.
You knew the First Lady?
Yes.
When she was a hairdresser or when she was actually the wife of the president?
When she was the First Lady, the former First Lady, yes.
And as corrupt as everyone says?
I never knew that. For me, she was the president of the Arab Women Organization, and she was doing a lot of work, humanitarian work, and I never saw that.
So a shock, so a revelation.
Oh, yes, I am disappointed so much.
You know, do all of you know the story of Hama in Syria? A popular uprising that was put down by Hafez al-Assad. Naomi, you're shaking your head, yes. The pictures were extraordinary, but the massacre that occurred there, the story has still never been told. Is that a scenario that worries any of you in either of any of your countries?
No. In Tunisia, no, it's not going to be like that.
Nancy?
I'm not worried about that. I think the Mubarak regime is sort of too clumsy and heavy-handed. Yesterday,
funny.
I mean, yesterday when the F-16s were flying overhead the crowd in Tahrir Square, I couldn't believe it. I thought, what are they going to do? Are they going to bomb the central, you know, the center of Cairo? Unlikely. You know, these demonstrations are so out in the open. They're being, you know, they're online. They're being broadcast 24 hours a day. I don't think that anything can quite happen so covertly.
And that's what the U.S. military aid can buy, those planes. It doesn't say much more than that.
But in Yemen, there actually is a fear that the country could devolve into chaos with these tribal regions that you're talking about and these various uprisings all kind of coalescing to make a very dangerous situation.
Yeah, most of Yemen is armed. Well, one of the major problems in Yemen is the amount of weapons that's being distributed amongst everybody. And there are laws against weapons, but law is never enforced there, from traffic laws to,
really?
You know, it doesn't really make a difference. So,
Raja, what of the cleric Awlaki, who is such a huge force in the headlines criticizing
that was,
America?
That's the American
right, the American cleric,
cleric
yeah. who is calling for the downfall of U.S. institutions. Is this voice silenced in this counter sort of pro-democracy movement?
You know, Al-Awlaki really isn't. Al-Awlaki does have a following, but not much. Like, the movement in Yemen is it's an intellectual movement. So they could tell the difference between voices that are positive and voices that are just, you know, fanatics and
so
radicals.
Well, let me ask all three of you, since we have representatives from Egypt and Tunisia and Yemen. There was a question I saw actually on an Egyptian blog out of Detroit where they were asking, is this 1776 or 1864, the year of the Civil War? So in Egypt, Nancy, Youssef, 1776 or 1864?
I actually hope it's 1789 without you
with
know
the Constitution.
Without the terror that follows.
Naima?
2011.
Yeah. She's all about the now.
Well,
and Raja?
Yeah, same thing, 2011.
It's all on their own. Naima Noor is the director of the Tunisian Cultural and Information Center. Raja Athavani is Yemeni-American, a student at Human Rights and International Development. And Nancy Youssef, Egyptian-American, professor of English literature at City University New York, Baruch in New York. Thanks to all three of you.
Thank you.
The democratic image does not require an American model.
A reference. 2011,
that's for sure. Voices of Arab Americans are watching their homelands. You can join the conversation. Have you been in touch with your relatives? Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or go to thetakeaway.org and find out how you can participate in this conversation. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.